Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Howard, thank you very much. We are back here at the coveted corner booth of Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California. I'm Patrick Evans, and I'm here with my spiritual guru and Captain Slick, lead singer of the Stick Shifts, Mr. Randy Florence.
Great. Now people are going to want my autograph and pictures and everything else.
Talked about it on one of our previous podcasts. I think you guys really do need to do a reunion tour of Captain Slick.
I might be the only one still alive.
We find people. I feel like Tommy Fields wanted to be part of that band.
Didn't he?
Yeah, I felt like he did.
I'm going to find my jacket, put those studs back on there, Captain Slick. I'm going to show up at the plaza and go, hello, I'm here. Well, Let's perform together. We've done karaoke together.
And people laugh. There wasn't a dry seat in the house.
We don't sell it as a musical. It's a comedy.
It's a comedy. To come. What's your favorite song? What's a karaoke song that you would really want to do?
I have a goal to perform at Open Call, and I want to perform a song by Barry, so I'm going to ask his permission. Lay Me Down. One of my all-time favorite songs is one of my favorite songs by Barry.
Okay.
And I love that as a karaoke song.
Speaking of the McCallum's Open Call, they're a sponsor of our podcast, which probably means it's a conflict of interest and you can't.
I'm in McCallum, the plaza.
What's it?
I'll just do it here.
Okay.
I'll just sing it out.
I want to do Cabaret.
The song?
The song. I'd like to do the whole show. I'd like to be the MC.
I could see you a little Joel.
Really want to do
there.
That. Yeah. That's really what I want to. I talked to Ron Oliver about it. He needs to just do a production of Cabaret.
Okay. Can I be in it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'll be Liza Minnelli.
That'll be perfect. All right, let's get to our guests because we have two incredible guests. Two incredible guests.
Two for one.
We have the great Michael Childers, who has been, you're one of the very few, you're a lucky victim. You've been on a couple of times.
Three. You are our first three-timer.
A star is reborn.
That's true.
I just thought you were paying penance for something. What did you do wrong now?
I have a face made for radio.
We're on video now, too. And you brought your friend Scott Coulter.
The best.
I got to meet Scott. You came on Eye of the Desert.
That's right.
You are working with the Plaza Theater.
I am.
And you recruited Peter Doubt to be a part of your Christmas show.
I did.
This year.
We launched, one of the things we're doing at the Plaza is we've launched the Palm Spring Pops Orchestra.
Yep.
In a four-show series, and our first show was a holiday show. And we included, in addition to the Palm Spring Pops Orchestra, we had the Coachella Valley Classical Voices, we had the Gay Men's Chorus, we had local actress Lizzie Sosa, cabaret superstar Carol J. Buford, and Peter Doubt sang. He read "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," which was beautiful. And then he and Carol did a duet together, and he stopped the show. It was fabulous. But when I was pitching that on Patrick's show, Patrick agreed that he would sing in next year's show. So it is. It's set in stone.
No, it's set in stone. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. All right.
That's the name of the song you're doing.
This is the second time.
Set in stone.
There you go. So I might get to perform on the stage at the Plaza Theater before you. We'll see.
Oh, I think that the odds of that happening are probably pretty good that you will perform on the plaza before me.
I'm very excited about it.
I think that is so cool. I might even get a ticket for that one.
You better tell your fan club about this. Yeah. I'll take it.
We could actually even do a Christmas version of Cabaret. We can make that work. Add some jingle bells in there.
I like that idea.
Yeah, you could kill two dreams with one tune. So that would be awesome.
Put down the knitting, the book, and those jingle bells, Dan.
Yes. It's time for a holiday.
You just went away all that eye makeup like Joel Grey, dude.
I do. No. I'm like, I remember seeing that, like, when the movie Cabaret finally was the ABC movie of the week. Well, I watched it with my parents, and I was like, that is just cool.
Yeah, see, my mom took us to that as a double bill. The first movie was Sound of Music. The second movie was Cabaret, and it scared the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah.
After 2 hours of Sound of Music.
When Julie Andrews, was that scary to you?
No, Cabaret scared the hell out of me.
That's a real weird.
Well, because of the whole Nazi connection to both
absolutely.
Music, I never thought about that. That works.
Yeah. It was up in the Bay Area.
Wow.
And I was probably, I don't know, what year did those come out?
The late, Cabaret was 1972, and Sound of Music was a few years before.
I was 65, I think, was Sound of Music.
15 being stared to death by Joel Grey.
I don't know, you got a guy who knows a lot about movies right here.
I always ask this question, like, Cabaret won Oscars for Liza Minnelli, Best Actress, Joel Grey, Best Supporting Actor. Bob Fosse, Best Director, but it did not win Best Picture. Do you know what won?
In 1972, what won?
Myra Breckinridge.
No, I worked on that. I did the poster.
Terrible. You worked on Myra Breckinridge?
You don't know. You with Raquel and Mae West?
That's right.
The campest film ever made.
Yes. Thank you for that.
It was since around cocaine. The director was an absentee director, but it was a fun experience.
I bet.
Yeah. Mae West and Raquel didn't talk to anybody. They hate each other.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty great movie to work on. I love working on really bad movies.
Yeah.
Can't Stop the Music.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You have to answer my question. What won Best Picture in 1972?
Okay. 72.
Cabaret won and all those others.
Who's that?
It's a biggie. It's
biggie.
It was The Godfather.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something?
Of course,
But Francis Ford Coppola didn't win Best Director. Bob Fosse won Best Director.
That's freaky.
Kind of shocking to think about.
Isn't
that good? Good trivia.
That's really good trivia. Super good trivia. That's a good year for movies when you get Cabaret and Godfather in the same year.
Yeah, look what we have now. You can't even remember what you saw last week.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, you're a big fan, though, this year of Nuremberg. That's the movie.
It's brilliant, and it's so well acted by one of the least pleasant actors I ever photographed. Russell Crowe.
But he hits people with phones.
Unbelievable in this. He becomes Herman Gehring. He is very powerful. And all the acting is extraordinary. Not that many people have seen it. It is a little depressing. A little. But
really, Nuremberg was depressing.
Oh. Only if you're Irish. There's some good movies.
Hamnet was a very good movie.
It's slow, but it's brilliant. Brilliant.
And very sad. But I thought very good.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. It's sad.
It's basically a true story.
That's the point.
Even in the funny Shakespeare plays, people die. Sad ones, really. There were a couple of other, there were some weird movies.
Yeah, did you see Sinners?
That was a weird movie.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
I like Sinners.
It's got it very original.
Yeah.
That guy's brilliant.
I liked Weapons.
I liked Weapons.
Did you see Weapons?
Yeah.
That was two different movies.
It was. I read a thing that said Weapons is all about addiction. All of the characters are addicted to something, and it's their own take on, because you see the same story told from four different perspectives.
Oh my God, I can't talk now.
And they're all,
I'm going to be thinking about this now.
Yeah.
I don't understand Marty Supreme. What is that movie about? No.
That's about addiction to ping pong.
Yeah,
ping
and then it becomes a heist movie at the end. It's weird. That's a weird one.
Changes gears. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Wicked Part 2. I loved both Wicked films.
Haven't seen it yet, but thank you for saying that.
No, I did. I liked both of them. I thought they did a great job. And I thought both Cynthia and Ariana were awesome.
Were you at Cynthia's performance?
Yes. I was with the Palm Spring Pops, which I put together. So The orchestra of evening. No, I produced the orchestra part. Yeah, the orchestra part was mine.
Yeah.
She was awesome. She was great to
talk about that night.
Phenomenal.
Because it opened up the theater, basically.
A big opening.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge.
We had a John Bolton, who's the general manager of the program.
Previous guest on the podcast.
Who is so smart. He did a very smart thing.
Oh, different John Bolton.
No, but he did a, we did a soft open the week before. And
hang on, stop. We're going to start this over again. Hey, guys. I need you to keep it down to
well,
please. Thank you. Law of mics. Over that.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and pick that back up from the start of that question.
What was the question?
The opening night.
The opening night, Ariana Grande.
Cynthia Erivo.
Oh, Cynthia Erivo. Mm. All right, let's start over again. The opening night.
Welcome.
Cynthia Erivo helped open the Palm Springs Plaza Theater.
She did.
And
she
you put together the orchestra.
I did. The Palm Springs Pops accompanied her, which was incredible. And it was directed by Anthony Parnther, and her music director, Mark Meadows, was on the piano. And it was really, it was a thrilling evening. It was amazing to think that this historic movie theater is opening almost 100 years after it first opened.
Yeah.
And that the opening act was the female who's starring in the highest grossing movie musical of all time, part two of which opened 4 days before her concert. So it was really, John Bolton did a great job of securing her for that spot. And I was thrilled that he asked us to put the Palm Springs Pops together to accompany her. And even smarter than that, the week before, he did a soft open with a show we put together called the Gratitude Concert, which was the Palm Springs Pops and a group of singers who did a show just for the donors, the people who had given money to help the theater's renovation and restoration. So they were all in the audience.
How
and
cool.
We sort of, yeah, gave thanks to them. Chief among them, of course, was David Lee.
David
who
Lee.
Gave $5 million. And the Plaza Theater is the David Clark Lee Plaza Theater. So
yeah, we had J.R. Roberts on here a couple of weeks ago talking about a lot of that.
It's yeah.
Phenomenal yeah. story.
Good stuff they're doing over there.
Tell me about Spot On Entertainment.
So Spot On Entertainment is my production company. It's about, I guess, almost 20 years old now. And for many years, I toured the country with, speaking of Wicked, Siva Schwartz, the man who wrote Wicked and Godspell and Pippin. I traveled with, he was at the piano, I sang, and Liz Calloway sang, and Debbie Gravitt. It was the four of us.
What?
We traveled around the world doing his songs in concert, and this was many years before Wicked. And after about 5 or 6 years, the man who booked that concert gave the business up. And everybody else was okay with that. And I said, I need this to keep happening. And I said, would you mind if I tried booking it? And Steve said, no, knock yourself out. So I started... I put together a group of shows that I could sell around the country, one of them being Steven Schwartz and Friends. And so that's how it happened. And now we create concerts for symphony orchestras and performing arts centers all around the world.
Wow.
Which is great. Yeah.
That is very
fun.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really
cool. Where did this all start with you?
It's so funny. I was just telling Michael today, we're both from really small towns in the South.
Deep South.
He's from North Carolina. I'm from outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I always wanted to be a singer. He always wanted to be
a star.
A star. No, that's true. He did. But I said, we both have come from these really small towns. And I said, it's so cool. Like, I can land in any major metropolitan city these days, and I know my way around. Like, I don't even have to get a map. Like, I know where I'm going, like in Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York and Miami and Cincinnati, anywhere, which is such a real gift for to think that to come from a really small place, location-wise, and become a citizen of
gratitude.
The world.
Yeah. It's a word.
Yes. I'd be so thankful for it.
Just, and what was that path, Scott?
Well, I always wanted to be a singer from the time I was a little kid. I always sang.
Musical family? No?
Not at all. And I used to sing along to, my parents had Barbra Streisand records and Helen Reddy and Olivia and John and Linda Ronstadt. So that's how I learned to sing. And
I want to go back to that. You just named all female singers.
That's right. And my voice, if you ever see one of our concerts, my voice is still very high because I mimicked, that's how I learned to sing. I mimicked the sounds that they made. And so my placement sort of stayed where theirs stays. it's still.
Were you in a church choir?
Not when I was a little kid.
In Chattanooga, no, yeah. Everyone was a church choir down there. I was the choir boy.
I was in the Chattanooga Boys Choir.
Oh, that's it. I knew you were.
Yeah, I was in that. Yep. But then when it came time to go to college, I played the piano, I played the trumpet, I sang. I wanted to be a music major, and my parents said, no, that's not, you can't be one.
What did they want you to do?
Something that would pay.
They
wanted me to have
practical.
A job.
Yeah, right. School.
They wanted me to have a job, and they said, because you can't support a family as a musician. And in my head, I'm thinking, that's not going to be an issue, but they don't know.
We'll deal with that problem.
They didn't know that part of the story yet. So I went to school outside of Nashville, Tennessee for 3 years to be a communications major, actually, and with an English minor, but I took all music courses. And after about 3 years, my parents said, you're really serious about this music thing, right? And I said, I am. And so they said, then you have to go to a good school. So I looked at the conservatory in Cincinnati, which has the country's first musical theater program. But the reason I went was for music education. And I went there to look at the school, and I wasn't very taken with it. But I auditioned for their musical theater program on a whim. And they accepted like 18 people that year, and I was one of them. So I said, that's it, I'm doing it. And that sort of changed my life. So I went to school for musical theater, and when I graduated, I moved to New York. I got an agent, and that just started everything.
And as you grew and became more successful, were your parents following your
career? Oh my gosh, my parents have never missed a single performance of anything. But they've been to everything. In fact, when I was a little kid, I remember at one of my very first, second or third piano recitals, my dad had a softball game scheduled the same night. And the piano teacher went to church with us. And so my dad had said, I have this ball game. Could you put him on later? And she said, of course. And so that night, my mother bribed the piano teacher to put me on like second or third so that my dad would miss it. So she could hold it over his head. Like, you weren't there. You should have given up the softball. Anyway.
She's a good agent. She was.
I love her already.
Yeah. But they've never missed anything. They've traveled. The beautiful thing about that was they used to travel to see me. It got to the point where I could start bringing them to see us. Like I could pay for them to be there. We took them to Mexico. We've taken them to all sorts of great places.
You took them to the Callum Theater.
I did. I brought them to the Callum Theater.
One night only.
They saw One Night Only. It was
a big conversation.
Yeah. But Michael has been so great to me in letting me direct those One Night Only concerts. And the first one he let me direct, Debbie Boone was in. And when I was a kid, my go-to number was You Light Up My Life. So my mom and dad got to be in the theater to see me working with Debbie Boone. You Light Up My Life, which was beautiful.
Such a great performance.
Yeah.
I remember being there.
Yeah.
She looked phenomenal.
She did.
She's the nicest girl. Oh, my God.
She did.
She's great.
She was wearing like that all white outfit.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She said she's done a couple with us.
Yeah.
But year she said she came up, she says, oh my gosh, I was so nervous. She said she just got really nervous as she started sick. So she held the microphone stand to ground her, and she was stunning. It was a great performance.
Mm.
But that was that night. I owe Michael Childers so much, but that night really was a dream come true because that was the 70s.
How did you two meet?
That was my. I had a gay bar.
I remember that night.
I'm too old.
I didn't say what.
You were studying 54. You were 54 below.
I was at 54 below. He was
a singer. And I just said, this guy's incredible. And I said, would you come to the pub desert? There'd be one night only to McCallum. And you came out to sing.
I did. Because of Jason Grob. Delightful Jason Grob was directing a Jerry Herman night for you.
And he did the two last shows we did. About New York had just the best, and the Las Vegas show.
Yeah.
But New York, his concept of being on a subway, going around New York City, the different subway stops, was beyond brilliant.
Wow. That was really smart.
Brought the house down. One of the greatest shows I've ever seen. So.
Yeah. It started at 42nd Street, and the announcer said, please stand clear of the closing doors. The next stop on this train is 50th Street. So you would go to the next stop and we sang songs that were associated with that part of town, so it went around the whole island of Manhattan.
Yeah. What
and
a
came
brilliant
back.
Yeah. Concept.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me some of the songs.
Yeah. Drop Me Off in Harlem was in Harlem. Gosh, I came.
Downtown.
Copacabana was on the east side for Barry Manilow.
Of course.
Yep. At Staten Island Ferry was Don't Rain on My Parade. In the Village, we did YMCA for the Village people. New York, of course, was in there. 42nd Street. It was so fun. that we're actually going to, I'm in the process of licensing that show so that it can be done so theatrically good. In theaters around the country so that CV Rep could do it or the La Jolla Playhouse could do it or so as a musical review thing, because it was really fun and educational.
I love it.
People loved it.
You've worked with one of my favorite people in the world, Billy Stritch.
Uh-huh.
I love
Billy. Yeah, Billy's awesome. He's done all of
the
just
did his album cover last Sunday.
Yeah.
With a 6-hour photo shoot. Oh, it's going to be great.
Michael
he said it was the most, he posted about it. He said it was a sublime experience working with you.
Never had been photographed like this. And they're great.
Yeah. We've done a several one-night onlys with Billy.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
And for the Plaza Theater, I created a show for the Plaza that was going to open there, going to be the grand opening if they couldn't get a headliner to do it. So we came up with the idea to honor the icons of Palm Springs, honor the people that have made this such a great town. Michael was one of the very first honorees. He was the first name on the list that we discussed. But it was Lucy Arnaz and Lawrence Luckenbill and Michael Childers and Michael Holmes of the Purple Room.
Paul Feig.
And Paul Feig. And
Trixie Mattel.
Trixie Mattel.
Frank Sinatra made an appearance.
Yeah. And Billy. So when we came up with this idea, when they found Cynthia, they wanted to still have this be part of the opening week, so we moved it to December 8th. But I had the idea to have Billy host it, sing a little song about every honoree, and host it.
So good.
It was so great. And Jim Cook, who is brilliant, put together a little 2-minute introduction of each honoree. And then Billy sang them on. They came on and gave speeches. Michael's speech was phenomenal.
I skipped a page, but I thought of 4 jokes about Palm Springs. I didn't what Patrick would have done. Yeah. I just think of some jokes.
Yeah. And then it was really a nice night. And I think they're going to repeat that every year. I think it's going to have an annual event.
Good. It should be.
There was no. It was really special.
Did I hear Lucy and Larry finished off with the song?
Oh, they sang, sweet. Yeah. They
20 off, handkerchiefs.
They finished off their section with, they sing Married from Patrick's show Cabaret. Which I think you should do a one-man version of Cabaret. Now, wouldn't that be interesting? Play all the parts. And I say that because
there you go.
Cynthia Erivo.
Because no one will work with me.
No. It would be a tour de force. Cynthia Erivo is about to do a one-person version of Dracula on the West End.
She's oh, my gosh.
She's playing every role. But
and she's so talented.
She can do anything.
Yeah. I see that.
I think you're deflecting.
I think that could work for you.
I think we've got something going here.
I think that would be fantastic.
It might be a shitty show, but I'd pay to see it.
I'd pay to see it, too.
It'd be a great show, and Patrick, you'll finally come out of the closet.
Because all the great songs are for Sally Bowles.
That's true.
So if you play the MC, you don't really get to sing very much, except Vilkelman.
Vilkelman,
right?
Yeah. But I do want to do Cabaret.
I know.
So
well,
I really
Christmas.
Want to do.
We're going to make a Christmas version of Cabaret.
That was such a great idea.
During COVID, my company's thought, since we couldn't perform and we were all spread out around the country, we rewrote the lyrics to YMCA to be Happy Holiday. We wrote a whole Christmas song based on YMCA, and it is so joyous and fun. It's really... That's a fun thing. So we can make Cabaret a Christmas thing. I'm going to work on it.
The theaters here, you've been performed in a lot of...
None of them. I performed at the McCallum.
That's it.
And I've done stuff at the Plaza, but I haven't done the theaters, but the legitimate theaters.
You've been in a lot of legitimate theaters.
I have.
How do the theaters in the Plaza and the McCallum, how do you see those against other places in the country?
We've mainly played performing arts centers, and you have such great theaters here like CV Rep and The Bent, which my friend Stevie Rosenbaum runs.
Mm-hmm.
But we do primarily performing arts centers. And I have to say the McCallum and the Plaza are two of the best places to play.
Yeah.
The lights and sound at the McCallum, we've always had great stuff there. And the Plaza, they spent all that money they restored the theater.
Right.
People are like, it looks the same. I was like, yes, that's called a restoration.
it's
not a renovation.
Exactly
it's
the same.
A restoration.
And most of the people that said that were restored.
Yeah.
So
I'm the only one.
Brilliant. End of interview. That is awesome.
Wow.
That's
if you could drop a lavalier mic,
that's
I
awesome.
Just dropped my pen.
That's awesome. But the first time Michael and I went to the Plaza, they gave us a tour. The floor was gone. It was just a big pit.
Shovels
of
dirt.
They excavated the whole thing because they put a state-of-the-art air conditioning system under the floor. so that the air comes up through these vents at your feet as opposed to this loud noise overhead that you can't really control. And then they put the floor back in. They restored everything. The sound system is top notch.
I read that was made by the company that did the Sphere.
Oh, yeah.
In Vegas?
Yeah. Wow. And what they did that was really smart, the green room at the Plaza is one of the greatest rooms in all of Palm Springs.
Love it.
Could I just stay here when I come? It's so nice. You want to spend time there. And for an artist, a touring artist, who you're in dressing rooms all the time of varying degrees of luxury, and to go in a place that feels so welcoming and where you just want to, you feel taken care of. It feels like
it's made for the artist. Yeah.
And they had a beautiful sign created, gorgeous neon sign with the Plaza logo that welcomes every artist, and this big neon sign marquee. It's really beautiful.
And a great buffet.
Yeah.
Cocktail bar. Yeah. It's singing waitresses.
Yeah. All right. Now I'm 100% into this script because I want the buffet and the
cocktail. Do they need a singing meteorologist? Oh, yes. It's a nice place.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
You could perform there.
I'm going to do the buffet.
I'm going to do the show. It's already done.
Production people spend half their lives waiting backstage with the orchestra or their number and this and that. So it's great to have a beautiful place
that you want to be
out. Some other theaters, not so great to hang around
in. Yeah. Jump Bolton's done a really fabulous job in the space. Yeah.
It's going to attract performers from all over the world just because of the performer there.
Just the opening weeks, it's like, are you kidding me?
Kelly
Tomlin,
sold out shows.
John Waters. And
there's hundreds. You suddenly go down Palm Springs at 9:30 at night, the audience had come out, 650 people seeing a great show. And there's tons of people downtown looking for restaurants, spending money downtown, bringing a lot of money to the community. Yeah. That's exciting.
It's exciting.
It's a huge impact.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm the only one alive that is. It was, went to the Plaza Theater in 1959. My grandmother took me there because I wanted to see.
Don't record this.
She lived over here in Palm Desert. I wanted to see Esther Williams' double feature. She dropped me off, and I was a little kid downtown. We left. Oh, it was so wonderful to be with the Earth.
That's very cool.
That's a really cool story. Yeah.
And they had a great magazine and bookstore next door where that restaurant is, Kakalura. Was a magazine shop. Huh? And that's the first time I saw dirty magazines. I thought, ooh, this is real. For downtown Palm Springs, they don't even have that now.
It wasn't last time.
It's fun. Yeah.
That was great.
Pretty X-rated. I was 15. I went up to the balcony. I said, I wonder what the Esther Williams movie looked like up there. Different view. And there was people walking around, so straight from row to row and stuff. And I thought, funny things going on. I was 15. Horny as hell. High school kid. There were things happening. You ever see Midnight Cowboy? The BJ sequence in Midnight Cowboy? That's what was happening up there. So my first experience, I owe to the Plaza Theater. Turning out the way I have.
He did.
Thank
not
you, God. Thank
Plaza
you, God.
Theater man.
Thank
Michael
you, God.
Yeah. Yeah. Today.
Thank you, God, for a little action on the balcony.
He did not include that in his speech.
I was going to say that in that third row in the balcony in 1959, they had my first blowjob.
Yeah. How about that? Yeah, we did it.
Billy Stretch said, "You better not tell that."
He was great, and also that night honored Brian Ray, who, in addition to being Paul McCartney's guitarist, has done wonderful things for Palm Springs.
We're talking to him about being on the show.
He's a really nice guy and super talented.
We're getting some really amazing history, and you guys are phenomenal. It's just so fun to hear all the stories.
He's full of stories. In fact,
he is full of stories.
Michael, can I tell him about the show? Can we put it out there?
Yeah.
Several years ago, I asked him if I could have permission to write a theater piece about his life. Because number one, he has all these extraordinary photos of all these artists, but he has a story to go with every one of them. And every time you mention a name, like if you're at dinner, you'll say, I saw the latest movie with Cher. He's like, oh, I remember when I was with Cher, like on the beach in 1974 in Malibu, and you know, a tornado. Like, he has a story for everything.
Yeah, and Dinah Ross and Bob Dylan were my next door neighbors. Hanging out with Bob, smoking a J. I said, we're doing a Midnight Cowboy movie. Would you like to write a song? Yeah. He said, well, let me read the script. He read the script. And we finishing the movie, locked in the music in New York. It was getting too late. And this little package arrived in the office. It said, from Bob Dylan Productions. He said, I know it's a little late, guys, but here's my take on your movie. I hope you like the song. And it was called Lady Lele.
Can
you imagine that as the theme song for a minute? We had everybody's talking, which was better, but we could have had the Bob Dylan song as well.
Everybody should know this, but when you said we made the movie, who was the other person?
My partner, John Schlesinger. And tonight we're opening at the Camelot, the Palm Springs Cultural Center. Is my husband makes movies, part two. It's a series of his last 8 films. Because last year we did them, and then this is great series. I mean, 300-400 people there tonight.
And
And this is his 100th birthday. Is coming up in 2 weeks, so they're celebrating in film festivals and theaters all around the world.
Isn't that great? Yes. So, say one little word, just share, brought on that whole thing. So, his life story is really—it's unbelievable. And part of the overarching story would be that. He was born and raised in North Carolina at a time where you could not be gay. You couldn't even talk about being gay. Mm-hmm. Ends up in a 3-decade-plus relationship with an Oscar-winning director in Hollywood. Becomes a world-famous photographer. And then just a few months ago, marries his longtime boyfriend.
Yep.
So his life story perfectly mimics the gay rights movement in America. And to be able to tell that story through his story and all that he's seen and captured with his
That's
lens.
That's an amazing idea.
Isn't that a great idea?
Very, very cool. And by the way, Belinda, congratulations on your wedding.
Thank you. What a wonderful person. Documentary filmmaker. Won Berlin Film Festival last year. The Paris Film Festival came in number 2. And played here at the festival. And terrific. He's quite wonderful.
Yeah.
But he lives in San Francisco.
Right.
And I live here.
Long distance relationship.
That's why it's lasted 22 years. 22 years.
My wife lives in L.A. and I live here. We make it work.
By the way, we're willing to play ourselves.
Perfect.
In the movie.
Perfect.
There's got to be a
podcast. I'd rather play somebody else.
He's going to play Liza Minnelli.
I'm going to play Liza Minnelli.
This, I can't wait.
I have a question for you while we're on this subject and talking about the gay rights movement. And you mentioned that your parents were very worried about you supporting your family. That's not a big deal. So when did you come out to your family?
I came out to my family. I was 23 when I came out. And I remember saying to my mother, I just had the hardest time telling my mom. And but I wanted to tell her first because I knew that she would be loving and accepting. And she wasn't. And she said, are you trying to tell me that you're gay? And I said, yes, that's what I'm trying to tell you. And she was like, oh my God, just hysterical. Southern mom, oh my God, I can't believe it. How could you do this? How did you do this? I said, Mom,
you knew.
I did not know. Yes, you knew. I had no idea. Yes, you did. When your father and I talked about the possibility, I said, see? If you were talking about the possibility, you knew.
You at least suspected.
Yeah. So then we went and told my dad, his response was kinder. But I was just so glad it was over. And I remember after we finally talked about it, I went upstairs to my childhood bedroom and laid down. I just wanted to be away from them, actually. But I remember her coming. I could hear her coming up the stairs, my mom, pretended to be asleep. And she came and she sat on the side of the bed and she rubbed my arm and patted my hand. And I knew that it was going to be okay.
Aww.
And they came around. It took a while.
Lovely.
It's beautiful.
Because you said now you bring them to your...
And my husband, I've been with my now husband for 31 years.
Wow.
So when they met Dave, I think that sort of... They were already okay with it. It took a while, but they loved him. They would keep him and get rid of me. So you had to stay together. Yeah. So that made all the difference. But my mom and dad were from the South. We went to church 3 times a week, once on Wednesday and twice on Sunday. And I carried a Bible everywhere. I wanted to be a minister. So
they didn't know any gay people.
They didn't know that they did.
Right.
Everybody that they knew was closeted.
I couldn't wait to get out of it. Deep South.
So it was
no rock and roll, just rock and religion.
And now they're role models. And I lost my mom just about 2.5 years ago. And her eulogy, I gave the eulogy at her service, and I told that story and about how bravely and fiercely and unconditionally she supported me and defended me to friends in that town. Like, it was a real big deal. And when I got married, she walked me down.
Your dad told me when he was out here, said Scott was always very special. He was the sensitive type, you know. That's the word for Dave.
and also an asshole. So that's the other word for sensitive, spiky asshole. Yeah.
Are you going to tell this story?
What, the story I just told?
Yours.
Maybe someday. Maybe. It's a pretty interesting story. Thank you. I'm proud of it. It's a story like... I didn't set out to do any of the things that I'm doing. I wanted to be a Broadway star. But when I moved to New York, I had an agent. And my very first audition, I got cast. It was a new, brand new musical written by Richard Rodgers' grandson, whose name is Adam Gettle, called Floyd Collins. And it was for the out-of-town production before it came to New York. And last year, it finally played on Broadway for the first time. And then I did the national tour Forever Plaid. And while I was on that tour, I got called to come in to replace Sam Harris in Greece. Sam Harris in Greece. The Rosie O'Donnell version of Greece.
Pretty big role.
Which is, it's a crazy high song he had to sing. So they flew me in from the tour. I auditioned on the stage at the theater. I was there. Daisy Fuentes was there to audition for Rizzo. A soap star named Billy Hupsey was there to audition for Kaniki. And me. I came out. I sang the song. I nailed it. The music director came running down the aisle. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You can do this. You can do this. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Where are you going to be for the next 3 days? We know how to reach you. Do we have your number? All this sort of stuff. This is so great. This is so great. I remember leaving the stage, and there was a cast member who happened to be backstage. His name was Paul Castry. And he was like, that was fantastic. Oh my gosh, you're going to love it here. And the stage door man said, welcome to the family. You know, I was like, oh my God. I remember I called Dave on the phone. I was like, I got it. And I never heard from them. They never called me. They never called me to say you got it. They never called me to say you didn't get it. They never called me to say nothing.
That's pretty shitty.
Did
you end up finding out
showbiz?
Who got it? I know who got it. And I know why I didn't get it. I had been on a bus and truck tour for 6 months. And you do a show and you eat and go to bed and you might get and do a show. So I probably gained 5-10 pounds. So I probably didn't look like they thought I looked. But... or at least that's what I tell myself. But at that moment, I said, I'm never going to, and I've only been in Europe for 2 years. I said, I'm never going to wait for someone else's permission to do what I want to do. And so that's when I started doing my own thing. And it has led to everything else. And the music director who came running down the aisle, we've since become friends, and he does not know this story. And he's someone whose name he would know, so I'm not going to say it.
Go ahead.
But no. But on my...
Is it Bill?
No.
Is it Tony?
No. But on my 50th birthday, completely unrelated, the day I turned 50, he didn't know it was my birthday, I got an email from this man saying, hey, I've been seeing all the wonderful things you're doing. If you ever need a piano player, please think of me. And I was like...
Did you ask him to come out and try out?
Right. And I was like, isn't that something? Like, the reason my life story turned out the way it did was because of this person who has no idea that I'm that kid and now is asking for... Just keep me
for
in mind.
For you to which hire
I,
him.
Yeah, which that's, I thought was really... I was like, that's an awesome story.
It's something to be able to look back and see the path as it happened and realize that everything happened the way it was supposed to happen.
And one of the great things was Jason Grigg. I created a show for the ASCAP Foundation for Jerry Herman, and Jason Grigg is one of the cast members. And that's how Jason brought me to Michael Childers. And Michael has been we talk today, like we're like family for like
11 years.
Yeah, 11 years, like brothers.
I have to play you the voicemail that Jason once left for me. It's just funny.
He's such a character.
He's a happy person.
Yeah.
He's terrific.
But this March 3rd, we're doing our fourth production. March 10th. We're doing our fourth production together. One Night in Hollywood, the music of the movies.
One night. With Dave Karger from Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
Narrating all the Oscar-winning songs. It's going to be a wonderful, exciting evening. Yeah. Tickets are on sale now.
The Plaza Theater.
March 10th.
March 10th.
Well, you've got a number of shows coming up that you produce for the Plaza.
I do. January 20th, Liz Callaway with the Palms and Pops. It's completely sold out. I just found out it's completely sold out. And then March 3rd, that was where Marsh Stern comes in. We have Music of the Knights, which is with a K, Knights.
So great show.
Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber, Sir Paul McCartney, Sir Elton John, their music with the Pomps and Pops Orchestra. And then April 14th, our final show of the season is called Disco Inferno, The Songs of the 70s, which is ridiculously fun.
Oh.
It stars two-time Grammy Award-winning Tamika Lawrence, who actually, Tamika and I, and another singer, Shelley Atkinson, on February 15th, are with the St. Louis Symphony, doing our Tina Turner show with the Tina Turner Estate, along with Kennedy Holmes, Brittany Howard, and Jennifer Hudson, we think is going to do it.
She is one of the greatest Tina Turners I ever saw. She was in our show.
She's
phenomenal. And I photographed my first photo shoot for rock and roll. I was on tour with James Brown Band, and the opening act was Tina Turner.
Oh, my God.
This is in 1968
yeah.
in Northern England. Tina. Loved her.
Yeah,
loved
she's
her.
Awesome.
I saw the Ike and Tina Turner review in 1970.
Yeah. This is way before Ike.
The February 15th show is going to be live streamed, so I think it's going to be on YouTube TV, so you can watch it from home. But the Music of the Nights, the show March 3rd, I want to get Brian Ray, who was one of the honorees at the Icons of Palm Springs the first time. He's Paul McCartney's guitarist, so I'd love to have him come play a song or two if he would agree. Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
And then the 10th is the movie night, so that's a big week.
That's a big week, Stoya.
Yeah.
Tell me about your Mac Awards.
Oh, Mac is the Manhattan Association of Cabaret, Concerts and Cabaret in New York City, and that's... When I didn't get cast in Grease, I was like, I'm going to do my own thing. So I started doing solo cabaret shows, and I was lucky enough to very quickly be taken under the wing of some influential people who really helped me, and that's what led to those awards, which was really great.
Well, that's got to be incredibly gratifying, you know, especially after that experience, and then you take a different trajectory entirely.
Yeah.
That's kind of all of a sudden you're the toast of the town, but, you know.
In my head, maybe.
Yeah. No, I think it's a big deal, though.
But we were talking about Michael's captured the world through his lens. And when I was a little boy, I wanted to be a minister. I think I mentioned I carried a Bible everywhere I went. And I still feel like that's what I am. I do in our concerts, when I sing with the audience or talk to the audience, I feel like it's kind of ministering.
A different message.
Yeah, it's a different message.
Yeah, church revival.
Church revival.
Tithings are a lot higher.
Yes, but just because music is such a balm for the soul, and especially now it's such a gift to people they come see things. So
it's a universal language.
It is a universal language. Yeah.
Now, with Spot On, you're doing all of this producing and you know, putting the shows together all across the country. How much performing do you still get to do?
I do at least probably two concerts a week.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot.
Yeah. We're on the road about 46 or 48 weeks a year.
I want your Advantage miles.
Right, I know, right?
They're
Delta,
I don't know how you do
they're
it.
Delta Sky miles. But I sing for at least twice a week. But my latest project, I don't know if Michael even knows this, but Stephen Schwartz, who's my mentor, has changed my life, gave me permission years ago to create a musical, a theatrical musical review of his songbook. We did a workshop in New York this summer, which he loved and gave his blessing to. So it's going to open this September. It's opening at a theater in Cincinnati before being licensed for around the world productions, or hopefully like a Broadway or a West End or something. So that's
you're one of the first producers that I know has worked bringing Broadway to symphony orchestras. The biggest orchestras in America, 40, 50 pieces. And he plays in these great theaters and auditoriums with these amazing musicians. And you bring Broadway to them. Or rock.
Or rock.
Or disco. Yeah. Or whatever.
Or disco. Yeah. All sorts of stuff. Yeah. We try. We're trying.
But no one else did that before that I know.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. But I've been really lucky to work with extraordinary people my whole life, like Michael being a prime example. And one thing I'm proud of is that I don't just, when I work with people, most often they become really close friends, like, or family, as in the case of the Children's Year.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. I want to say it's like a father and a son, but you look at a picture of us and we look like brothers, which pisses me off. I was like, we take photos and he looks younger. And I'm like,
he looks 5 years younger than the last time he was on the podcast.
He drives me crazy. It's not fair. It's not fair.
Are you still fooling around with AI with your...
Yeah, I'm doing
this summer in Provincetown, I have a show on July 17th, the Best Gallery there. And the one whole section of the show are AI photographs. And I'm doing a lecture at the Arts Institute, the college there in P-Town, about AI. The younger art students and photographers love AI. I'm not totally sold, but I did a great show. I think you saw it over here, yes. Melissa Morgan Gallery.
Yep. Yes.
And we had 300 people there opening night. It's really good. And I'm doing it at University of California, Riverside, at the museum there. We're doing next fall a big AI show there.
I just think about how far it's come since you did that show.
I'm just working with it, but I had a great teacher, because I'm not a techie, but who taught me all the technique. But it expands your whole vision. What I always wanted to do with album covers, with all the retouching and lasers and special effects, now you can do it on a computer. So it's really, really amazing.
Yeah, he's so gifted.
Playing a role in anything you do at this point?
AI? Not yet. I hope that live performance is the last thing to go.
Yes.
But as a performer, even for the one and only shows, you have to have a bio in the program. Like your bio. And so you send your bios into the prison organization and they print them. But lately, they've been running the bios through AI. This sounds stupid. I didn't write that.
No, but they can rewrite.
So we have to, it's starting to go in our contracts. Like the bios have to be printed as received. You can't run it through. To try to shorten 100 words to 25 through some sort of ChatGPT thing is stupid.
Yeah.
But the photographs, Michael, some of them are extraordinary. Oh, you just showed me two today.
Yeah. And we found a couple of old photographs taken 40 years ago. And I posted a couple on Facebook. And this is about a month ago. And one was the early picture I did Dolly Parton as Daisy May in the haystack. And Dolly was so great to work with. And it was a poster then their company put out, sold over a million copies. So here are her managers in Nashville. They'd never seen this since they'd forgotten about it. So she has a show going to Broadway, a big Dolly Parton show, Dolly. Not Hello Dolly, it'd be Dolly.
Dolly.
And next fall, and all of my photographs will be projected in the show.
That's really great.
Yeah.
And today's her 80th birthday.
Happy birthday, Dolly. And thank you for still being here, Dolly. Yeah.
Yes, she is a national treasure.
Yes, she is.
I love Dolly.
And you guys are treasures. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
It's our first three-timer on the show.
You'll be on 15 or 16 more times.
You might get a medal.
Sparkle.
Yeah, I'm going to send you an AI picture of you.
Keep bringing incredible guests like Scott.
Love these best.
You're the best.
Pretty soon you're going to be sitting on that side because we're going to be talking about the one man cabaret.
One man cabaret.
It's huge. I love it. We're going to absolutely. It's going.
Well, we'll find out.
One night in Hollywood.
March 10th. But get your tickets. Tickets are already on sale. So by the time this podcast drops, you can buy your tickets. It's going to be an incredible night.
Yes.
Michael Childress, Scott Coulter, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Randy Florence.
Thank you for researching. I did literally no research for this because I knew I didn't need to.
No, this is
going to be an amazing conversation.
We have fun. We have
John Molinar,
producer. We have fun here. That's way too cool. Coming back for more.
Good.
We have fun too. Thank you. I'm Patrick Evans. Our thanks to Skip here at Skip's Little Bar. Our thanks to the McCallum Theater. Please subscribe so you never miss another episode of Big Conversations Little Bar.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between. Conversations, little bar, and big conversations, little bar.